So really great to be here. It's been a while. I actually just got back from a month in India, so that was really exciting for me. I've never been before. While there, and of course in life in general, I saw a lot of examples of the way life is. And there's this teaching that the Buddha has called the cycle of dependent origination, or the links of dependent origination, which I just think is totally cool. And it's really complicated, and we're not going to get all complicated, but the first link in the chain that results, he says, that said, actually, I don't know if that's true, what is written down that he said that we read, that's more true, but the first thing that causes all this suffering, and it's like even the mass of old age, sickness and death or something like that, all the suffering that we experience in this life is ignorance. He defines ignorance in this teaching of dependent origination as just kind of misperceiving how things actually are. Now, truth to tell, when I think about ignorance, what immediately comes to my mind is that the chief culprit here is imagining that there are separate selves involved in our day-to-day existence, that I'm a me and you're a you, and the Buddha teaches that that's actually a mistaken perception about what's true, that the self and the other is a mistaken impression about the arising of independent experiences that just keep coming and keep coming and keep coming, and they come so fast that we kind of congeal them into this sense of self and other. Having said that, the actual definition of ignorance is not seeing things the way they are and not understanding the Eightfold Path, which is a representation of the Buddha's kind of entire body of teaching. And it's like, well, hey, once you understand all the Buddha's teaching, you don't have ignorance anymore, and then you're not caught in the cycle of samsara, of birth, old age, sickness, and death. And either you disappear or you're a lot happier. And in this particular school of Buddhism that I happen to have trained mostly in, you don't just disappear, but you're probably a lot happier because you're not suffering so much. What did I run across today but a sutta called the, and that means one of the Buddhist writings, like the scripture, if you will, the Avijja Sutta. And Avijja is ignorance, so it's like the ignorant sutta. And it's in the traditional format of the sutta. You know, somebody came and asked the Buddha a question, and they bowed to him, and they sat down by his side, and then he answered the question. The question was, is there any one thing who's abandoning in a monk, in this case the monk was asking the question, who's abandoning in a monk, ignorance is abandoned and clear knowing arises. So in order to get rid of ignorance, what can I do? This monk is asking the Buddha. And the Buddha is kind and clear enough to say, oh yes, monk, there is one thing who's abandoning in a monk. Ignorance is abandoned and clear knowing arises. What is that one thing? Does anyone have a guess? Ignorance, monk! He just says, if you abandon ignorance, ignorance will subside and go away. So, thank goodness he then actually in this sutta, or it's written that he in this sutta said, well, what's really going on with this is if you see things as they are, and the translator actually uses the word separate here, which I'm not quite sure I like. I'll just read a little bit. Having heard that all things are unworthy of attachment, he knows directly everything, i.e. the monk that's asking the question, knows directly everything. Directly knowing everything, he comprehends everything. Comprehending everything, he sees all objects as, quote, something separate, end quote. Now there are footnotes which offer the possibility of this word separate. And it's especially confusing when we're talking about otherness, to use the word separate here. So some of the other possibilities are, he sees all things differently than other beings see them, i.e. with wisdom, without ignorance. Or he sees all things as in another way, which I think is a really kind of a better way to say it, in a way different than we usually see them. And then he goes on to say, well, he sees the eye as something separate, as just its thing, nothing other than the eye. He sees form, i.e. what the eye locks onto, as, or he sees it in another way. He sees eye consciousness in another way. He sees eye contact, the meeting of the form and the sense organ of the eye, as he sees it in another way. And whatever arises independent on eye contact, the meeting of form and eye, whether it's experienced as pleasure, pain, neutral, you know, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant or it's neutral, he sees this too as he sees it in another way. And then he goes on to talk about all the other sense organs. And also, so the nose, the tongue, the body, the skin, touch, etc. And he sees intellect in another way, i.e. the mind as a sense organ which produces thoughts, which are objects of that sense organ. Just like I'm looking at Carl right now, so my mind also has thoughts that arise that are in the same relationship between my eye and Carl. You know, that other over there, Carl. So this is how a monk dispels ignorance. He sees things directly. This is how any of us dispel ignorance. We see things as they are without this attributing all sorts of concepts onto the top of them. And then I've got this other sutta, which I'm not going to take the time to read, which essentially says, understanding what ignorance is, i.e. the absence of the wisdom of the teachings of the Buddha, the Eightfold Path, and understanding the way it ends, and of course the way you understand the way it ends is by studying the Eightfold Path. That's how you abate ignorance and get happy. That's how we relieve suffering, which is what we're here for. We're here not to suffer as much. I would guess if we did a survey, you know, 80% of us arrived at this door because of suffering of one kind or another in our lives. We want to be happy. We want to be other than suffering. So that is the definition of ignorance, and I just thought I represent that appropriately. Now, notwithstanding that huge atlas-like thing of the entire Eightfold Path being held up here in order to obey ignorance or let go of whatever, to obey ignorance, I'd like to go back to that thing about self and other. One of the great things about the Eightfold Path, the Buddha's teachings, is that any of these one teachings can lead you straight to liberation. You don't have to get the whole thing. You can follow one of them really deeply. You can make it a point of your study and practice, and it can get you to enlightenment. That's really a great thing to know. You don't have to know it all in order to let go of ignorance. So this making of an other, other only happens when there's self, right? And self happens at a really basic level. Like, think about a single-celled organism. How does a single-celled organism come to define self and other? Well, its very definition as an organism is that kind of it's got a cell wall around it that differentiates it from the things around it in the plasma of existence, right? It, at some point, begins to recognize other and backs away from other. I mean, it might get eaten by other, right? Or at some point, it starts eating other in like some way, extend its wall around other and eat and digest other, like we do with our mouths. We take other, and that other somehow becomes part of self. And I've talked about this before in here. It's one of the teachings that really kind of excites me. And, you know, it goes from single-celled organism to eating and defending to, I mean, we have this incredibly complex thing called that our immune system is all about shutting out other and preserving self. So to go from single-celled organism having a cell wall all the way to complicated immune system is all part of the body of making an other that is represented in this teaching about ignorance in the Buddhist teaching. Remember, for those of you who are here, the finger exercise? You know, what is finger? You know, how far do those muscles go into your hand and all that kind of stuff. And finger is really only finger when it's not palm or when it's not forearm. Otherwise, it doesn't exist. It's this concept. So there's this, we do that with everything. we define something other as not self, not the self of the poem, or as Loretta is different from Carl. Those are two independent objects that I've manufactured because I've drawn boundaries around them, and I'm sure they've created their own boundaries themselves. But it's my practice that we're working on here. So it's astounding to think about getting from that cell wall to racism, you know, which is, boy, it's the making of an other, and it's the making a threat out of something that is an other. When I was in India, the caste system, oh my goodness, how complicated. It was, I mean, I was just kept asking questions because I couldn't understand how this thing could exist. But it was all about this making of others. 25% of the population in India is in the untouchable caste, a quarter of the population. And this is otherness arising. It is astounding the depth to which this affects our lives and our society. Even, no surprise, I do it, everybody does it, but even the good Buddhists were really at work making others. I went to visit at one point a Buddhist center that was doing social work for a movement in India where people are converting in the lowest castes, are converting out of Hinduism and into Buddhism as a social movement to break the frame of the caste system so that these people could see themselves as somehow other than doomed to be in this low caste, and to break with the entire society's agreement that they are doomed in this lifetime to operate in this low caste and be treated the way they're treated by the rest of society. And I'd never heard of this movement before. I happen to be the executive director of one of the largest meditation centers in America, and I had never heard of this movement before. I was shocked at myself, at American Buddhism, for me never having heard of it. But in any case, that is that other aside. Along the way, it was one of the last things I was doing on my trip. Along the way, I talked with a bunch of other Buddhist people about, you know, what was going on in India and what's your idea about this movement and stuff. And almost the first thing out of everybody's mouth was, oh, those Ambedkar Buddhists, the founder's name was Ambedkar, those Ambedkar Buddhists, they changed the teaching. Like, they're not real Buddhists. Now, try picking apart this making, this otherness of them not being real Buddhists. And I got to tell you, it's got to be wrapped up in the classism and racism and every other ism that's involved in the making and the weaving of that caste system, right? That this entire class of people, that the target audience for which is a quarter of the Indian population, are somehow different Buddhists, and they're going to have to change in order to be kind of brought into the fold of Buddhism. Crazy. It really, it mystified me, and it was so clear to me. I totally saw it through this lens of ignorance, this otherness, and we do it all the time. We do it every day. Each of us does it every day. It's part of this human existence that we do. So, the exercise. I would like you quietly, please, to pick someone you don't know so well and go sit by them right now. And then I'll explain what we're going to do. Do we have an even number? Are we okay?
Yeah.
How convenient. Okay. So, for 4 minutes each, and these are people you don't know so well, so don't share your deepest, darkest secrets, okay? It's okay. But it's not going to be that challenging. I'm not going to kind of ask you to. So, but for 4 minutes each, I'll ring the bell when it's time to change. I would like one of you to ask the other, tell me who or what in your life is other. That person will answer the question like Muni or, you know, my partner or something. What is other? And often it'll probably be some stuff that kind of carries some emotional weight, because that'll be the easiest things that arise and identify. And then the person who's asking is going to ask you that question again. They're going to say, thank you. Tell me who or what in your life is other. Okay? Tell me who or what in your life is other. That means it can be a person, an organization, a concept like racism, a group of people. It can be whatever. Just to get familiar with all the different ways we do this in our lives. Okay? Yes? Tell me who or what in your life is other. The person with the longer head hair will be the person to ask first. Okay? Go. Okay.
I know.
Let's reform back into the bigger group, please. So we've got just a couple minutes to check in about this. My biggest question is, given that this goes all the way down to single-celled organism, the making of an other, how in our lives how do we change our behavior, or what kinds of things can we do to reduce our suffering around this? And does anyone have any ideas?
I have a question.
Sure.
So the basic ignorance that suffering arises from is experiencing separateness. That we are the illusion of being separate, or
that we mistake the basic. One of the definitions of ignorance is that we mistake the stream of dependent arising, the stream of things that happen, like my eye meeting with an image of you and me taking that to be you as a person and me as a separate person. So that's a misperception of what's actually going on, and reifying us into two separate beings. That is one of the basic things of ignorance and of suffering.
The relative truth is what people operate on, but we're speaking of what's most profound.
That's correct.
The bottom line.
That's correct. And how do we bridge the relative and the absolute in an effort to learn from the teaching? Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to add, it seems like, you know, like that phrase of like, I know how you feel. Where you can't possibly know how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've gone through this story and dialogue of history of all these different experiences, and that other individual's done the same thing, but completely totally different.
Right.
So it's almost like two worlds trying to connect. But there could be some type of connection, but you can't possibly know how.
So that's a great example, because it's really interesting. On one hand, if I were to say, I know how you feel, I'm negating actual input from you about how you feel, because I'm saying I already know, right? On the other hand, the inclination toward empathy is actually a really healthy one, right? So it's like, that's not a particularly skillful act, but the urge under it is really kind of great. What I hear you saying is that one of the things we could do is actually be open to hearing the experience of others without deciding we know how they feel.
They already make the judgment that I already know.
Right.
Whereas, they just...
You totally picked one of the things on my list, which was to suspend judgment. To try to be open to experience instead of judging experience all the time. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. I've got a question that... I don't know if it's within your purview, but since we have gotten to this place of experiencing separateness, and we may be on a path of transformation, that would be possible as well, but how is it purposeful and meaningful?
How is it purposeful and meaningful? Well, I mean, the easy answer is reducing suffering purposeful and meaningful. Because that's really what, that's, I think, why we sit.
Okay.
we train ourselves to live differently.
How is us experiencing all the separateness, or all that's separate from ourselves, purposeful and meaningful?
I don't know the answer to that question. You know, one of the things that that I wonder and wrestle with is if in fact it goes down to the core of a single cell organism, if it's that thorough in this realm of existence, then, you know, why are we fighting this, right? I mean, what's the use? On the other hand, I've heard some teachers say that our nature is actually different than that, that our nature is to be one with another, and that that's how thorough our misperception of reality is. And that's what the Buddha is pointing to, that our misperception of reality is so thorough that everything is built around it. And that a lot of stuff, maybe even everything, will disappear. And I don't necessarily mean the matter will go away, but our frame of how we perceive everything will change. And that's a lot, since so much is built on our perception. And I don't know much more than that. Loretta? Yeah?
So one thing that was striking me as I was going through my list of what is other to me was that how little of that defining of me versus other is actually necessary for my survival.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, I was thinking of the single-celled organism and how to, you know, defend or be eaten situation. And I think as I go through my life, I often feel from sort of a very reactive, knee-jerk kind of place that it is somehow important to my survival to define myself as myself and other as other. But in fact, as I'm going through this list, like really none of these separations are necessary for my survival. It's very, very few.
That is a
great.
Yeah,
I don't think any that I actually listed.
That's
are.
A great phrase. Defend or be eaten. So, like, I'm totally serious. You know, we could like go through our life, and when we tense up and go, all right, is this really a defend or be eaten moment? You know,
right.
That
right.
is so like it just says it right there.
Yeah.
And
so there's this contraction when I think about, you know, myself versus Republicans, right?
Yeah. Right.
Which can be more of an observation versus a delineation.
Yeah, that's good. We're over time, so I've led us a little bit astray. One quick thing, defend or be eaten notwithstanding, just notice when you use the word them. Every time you use the word them, go, what's really going on there? And that's a way you can practice pretty easily with this. So
just a couple of little
please.
Announcements.
Thanks, everyone.
We meet every Monday night, and you all again, especially the new people. We are entirely self-supporting. We have two baskets in the back. Donna means the practice.